wine department.
Family run for over 70 years. Mahurin Supermarket, Village Square Shopping Center in Waitsfield.
All right, we go to the phone. Joining us live on the line this morning, let's give a nice warm Radio Vermont welcome this morning to the Auditor of Accounts. Doug Hoffer is joining us. Doug releasing a report today about the state's website, the Vermont medical website, the Vermont Health Connect website, and his office really looking at not the problems that happened in the past and why the healthcare exchange ran into problems, but really looking at when others looked at it and found that there were problems, whether or not the state actually implemented any of the recommendations that those people had found problems and whether or not they put them into place. Doug, thank you for joining us. Is that a fair characterization of what you were looking at?
Yes. Just to put a little meat on that bone, throughout the process over the last couple of years, to their credit, the state understood the value of having outside independent parties review a number of the things that had been done by a variety of different contractors. And each one of those reports includes dozens, if not more, recommendations as to how to fix all the problems that they identified. So what we decided to do is look at those six or seven reports, which is quite a load for the staff, and see if, in fact, the state did devote the resources in the right places at the right time to try to solve all these problems.
So are we talking, if you say six or seven reports, are the recommendations number in the hundreds?
Yes, correct.
Okay. All right, that's a lot.
Yeah.
Okay, so the bottom...
Well, we got a lot of problems.
Yeah, well, and maybe you could give us a little background here. As you point out in this, for those who maybe have been on planet Mars for a few months here, talk a little bit about the background here. This began in 2013 and really has been a problem since day one.
Yeah, it actually began in the year before and would have started a bit earlier had there not been a lawsuit at the federal level challenging the constitutionality of the Affordable Care Act. But, you know, the state made a decision early on to go with CGI, which turned out to be not a good decision, and I don't remember all the details of that, but it became evident before too long that they were going to have a problem for the first open enrollment period in the fall of 13, and they did. And to be fair, we weren't the only state with problems. A lot of states had problems. In fact, almost all of those that work with CGI had problems, although there were others elsewhere. So as the magnitude and the seriousness of the problem became evident, the state understood that they had to make a change. That took quite a while. We didn't really look at that. That's been covered. You and your colleagues have done a pretty good job on that, I think. But when they did decide to pull the chain on this thing, they had another vendor lined up, which is Optum. They had reason to believe that those guys could get it done. That's always and continuing to be a question mark, but the transfer occurred in the late summer, early fall of last year, and now Optum has been operating on a series of short-term contracts, some of them with amendments. And they have put together, along with the state, a number of what they call releases that include fixes for a number, not all, but a number of these problems that are continuing. And as you know, the governor announced recently that they hope to meet one deadline, the first deadline, at the end of May, which we think is pretty aggressive, but that's their decision.
Mm-hmm. Let's stay on the current situation here for a moment, and then we'll go back to more to the report, because you've brought up Optum. And I have to tell you, Doug, one of the things in your report that I found the most troubling is talking about going forward here in this Optum contract, which you say it sounds as though it's really deficient, that it doesn't have any sort of accountability in it. And you say basically that's because the state had boxed itself into a corner and didn't have a lot of choices. So can you talk about the Optum contract and the problems?
Well, of course, I wasn't involved in the negotiation of the contract. I can't say with certainty, but we've heard informally and anecdotally that, you know, when Optum was approached, Optum had a lot of leverage and we didn't. They were identified as the party that could help get it done, and hopefully that's true, and there's some evidence that they've made progress. But if the state, and I expect they did, say to the vendor, we would like to include these performance measures and benchmarks, well, we didn't have a lot of leverage to force it on them. And I don't know what was said. I wasn't there, so I don't want to speculate. But I think that probably what happened is they were holding a lot of the coin at that point, and we weren't. So mm-hmm. I have every reason to think that the state tried, and I don't think they were able to get it done.
You also say that the benchmarks, you just mentioned this earlier, that the benchmarks that have been set up, that they're pretty aggressive, and the word that you use, whether or not they're going to, Optum's going to be able to get it done is quote unquote uncertain. Can you explain what you mean by uncertain?
Well, they have a lot to do. Some of it's very complicated. They're going to be moving from some manual processes to automation, although that'll take a little longer than May 30th, I believe. They're dealing with the things that I think most people who've been following this know, that change of circumstances is a problem. Renewals, there are over 7,000 people who are trying to make change of circumstances. That's like a change of address, or you got married or divorced, or whatever the case is. Renewals is self-evident. And there's over 7,000 in each instance that are backlogged. These are people who are trying like heck to get someone to make the changes they've requested, and it takes a long time, and they've hired a lot of people. That's one of the things they did. They understood that the automated fix was down the road, so they said, we just got to put more bodies on this, and they did. And I think they've made a dent, but they're not nearly done. There are some other continuing problems. There's no reconciliation for enrollment data between the state. A company called Benaissance, which handles the checks that everybody sends to VHC and the carriers, MVP, Blue Cross Blue Shield, and Delta Dental and the others. So also there's serious problems with the premium payment system. Some of that is a matter of policy, and it's a little curious to me. I'm not sure why, but in the very beginning, a decision was made that this company, Benaissance, which ultimately was receiving all these checks and then sending them back to the carriers, they could not move. If you sent them a check for $500 for a premium for a month, and you happened for some reason to send them $498 instead of $500, they would just hold on to it. They would not send it to Blue Cross or whomever it might be. And I don't know why, and they haven't changed that. Mm-hmm. But I believe they're in the process of talking to Benaissance about that and a number of related changes to improve the woefully dysfunctional premium payment system, which has caused people a lot of grief.
Okay. Hmm. All right. What worries you most looking forward here?
I'm not sure why they selected May 30. As we said, that's pretty aggressive. That's a made-up date, but once you announce it, you're stuck with it, you know, and you got to take some responsibility for it. But they have not. Here's one thing that concerns us: the second phase called the Release 2. They don't have a scope of work for that yet, and they don't have a contract for that yet. And this has kind of been the pattern. The negotiations seem to be taking quite a bit of time. And again, I'm not inside. I don't know why, but it kind of pushes everything forward when. You know, otherwise they seem to be working pretty well, although there have been some delays in some of the deliverables from Optum. But the good thing, before we get to more bad stuff, is that from the very beginning there were problems, and these are some of the things we learned from the reports, and was, if not self-evident, then we could all guess. There were problems with governance, and particularly with project management. And that stuff has shown some improvement, and it's absolutely critical. And that would be improvements in staffing and documentation and processes and so forth. And I think the state understood that they didn't get it right the first time. And if you don't have that right, then you're just going to be making the same kinds of mistakes over and over. So, you know, we'll give them a little credit for that, and that's absolutely essential. Whether they can get this done in a timely manner, because we have another enrollment period just around the corner, basically, remains to be seen.
How successful have they been, generally speaking, in implementing these recommendations?
They have pursued some and not all. And some of that is a matter of, you know, there's only so many people who have the knowledge and expertise who are working for us and or the vendor, or vendors, plural. And if you've got, Joe and Mary, and they know how to do eight things, you have to decide, well, which ones are they going to start with? Because these aren't problems that can be resolved in an hour or a day or a week. Some of them take a really concentrated and focused effort over a period of time. So whether they could buy more expertise through Optum or another vendor, I don't know. But I know that they've had to say, look, we can't do everything at once. So they've put some things aside.
Mm-hmm. In terms of the IT, I mean, you looked at two parts of this. You looked at the information technology part of it.
Right.
What did you find in that part that was encouraging, and what was not encouraging?
Well, the IT broadly defined is not just what, you know, lay people like you and me might think of as your computer. And by the way, there's some guys working on my porch with power tools. If that gets to be too much, let me know, and I'll tell them to take a break.
All right. Because
IT includes a whole lot of things. The operational stuff we discussed already a little bit, change of circumstances, renewals, premium payment processing. But IT, you know, that's the system itself, and that's where much of the problem was way back when, because they weren't using a system off the shelf. They were writing code for this stuff. And CGI originally only really met about a quarter of the deliverables that were in the original contract. That's how far behind they were, and only a certain percentage of that stuff worked. So, you know, in a way, you got to kind of cut Optum a bit of slack because they inherited a system that was a mess. And I think a decision was made to use what was available to the extent that it was functional and try to build off that as best they could rather than start from scratch. So, you know, they were really behind the eight ball for the whole thing. Mm-hmm. But IT includes, critically, the thing I mentioned a minute ago, governance and project management. And that's where they really have focused a lot of attention, and rightly so. System security is something we haven't heard a lot about. There were a couple of things last year that came up in the legislative session in 14, but they did address the highest priority IT security weaknesses last fall. And I think all of those have been corrected. However, there remain, as of the end of January, 70 moderate risk weaknesses. And a moderate risk is defined as a threat event that could be expected to have a serious adverse effect on organizational operations, assets, individuals, and so forth. So I think that's one of those where they've just said, look, we got the critical ones. We've got 12 other things to do. We'll get back to that.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. When you must have been having conversations with them while you were doing this, right?
Not me personally. We had a team working on it, but, you know, it was a little difficult because it's a moving target.
Right.
You know,
right.
We're trying to be as contemporaneous on this as we can, but as you see through the report, it says as of this date.
Right.
Might be the end of January, might be the end of February, mid-March, whatever it is. So at some point, you just have to say, we have to write this report.
Right.
We can't keep gathering information every day, so.
Well, I was really struck. I mean, you've got some information that's as recent as, you know, last Friday, though.
Well, that was important because in their response to our report, and we always do that, I think I've mentioned this on your show before, when you send a draft, final draft, to the auditee, you give them an opportunity to review it for any factual errors they may be, and they also get to write back to us and say, we disagree with your finding, here's some additional information, whatever the case may be, and we can respond to that.
Mm-hmm.
And there were a few instances where we actually changed the report in response to things they said. A couple of them were, oh, by the way, since you were last here, we did the following three things.
Right.
So that's why you see the date changes.
Okay. Is there a way for you to say percentage-wise how far they are in implementing the recommendations?
I wouldn't want to hazard a guess.
Okay.
That's a tough one because there's so many moving parts.
Okay. There's been discussion about ditching this healthcare exchange and going with a federal one.
Right.
You have at least a section here where you talk about recommendations. Is that among them?
Yes, indeed. And, of course, that'll be a decision for policymakers. But we just wanted people to know that, in our view, it would be essential, given the complexity and importance of the subject, to start now, frankly, and do some cost-benefit analysis of the different options. One obvious one is to go to the federal exchange. I know they've had some conversations, or at least legislators have, maybe the administration as well, with other states. I don't know what the extent of all the options are, but that's an important decision, and it needs to be studied. And quickly. The other piece, which I found a little troubling, was that the administration, in its proposal about this, not proposal, but they said, look, if we don't meet our deadlines and so forth, they said they would inform the legislature, or rather the Joint Fiscal Committee, because it would be off session in November, about what their findings were and their decisions, or their recommendations, rather, going forward. And it seemed to me that they should be talking to the legislature starting tomorrow, not wait till November.
Mm-hmm. In terms of when you say study whether or not they should look at something like the federal exchange, that doesn't mean you're recommending it today?
No. That's only that to the extent they are serious about options, they need to identify them, identify those that are realistic, and then look very carefully at what it means to change from the train we're on to a different one, because it's complicated. As you may know, you have to give the feds a year's notice. You can't just do it overnight. You have to give them notice, I think, in December, and then you could only do it the following, 13 months later, in January of the next year. The feds is one option. There are a couple of states that have had good success, and maybe they can be a model, but I'm not in the center of it. I don't know, but I think it's self-evident and prudent to do some analysis before you make a commitment of that magnitude.
So mixed bag in this report is what I took away.
That's fair. Yeah, I mean, there's progress. despite the progress, they still have some gaps and some problems, no question.
What did you learn doing this? What surprised you doing this?
I learned a lot, but one little comparatively minor thing kind of jumped out in the context of $126 million already spent and more coming. There was one little piece that struck me, and that is this vendor that I mentioned before that handles all these checks that are flying back and forth. They're called Benaissance, and the contract with them included a requirement that they develop the capability to handle small businesses in the exchange. And there was an acronym SHOP, I think it's called, Small Business Health Option, something or other. But as you know, that has been delayed indefinitely, and that will probably continue for quite some time. However, the state has been paying Benaissance $40,000 a month to essentially do nothing.
Wow. Okay.
Now, again, for, you know, $500,000 in the context of $126 million doesn't really rise to the top of the pile of problems, and particularly in the context of, you know, 7,000 people who can't get their renewals done or are having a problem with change of circumstances. That's a real life problem for them every day. But still, you know, $500,000 here, $500,000 there.
Right, yeah. You know, the other thing, last question, the other thing that really was, looked like it surprised you too, is that the new contractor, Optum, has not been paid a dime yet?
That's as of several months ago. I would be shocked if they haven't been paid something by now.
Okay. Because you have that $130 million as of the end of last year.
Right.
And most people are now assuming it's closer to $200. So,
well, before it's done, I think $200. We're likely to hit $200. But if I were Optum, would you keep working if you hadn't been paid anything?
No. No, not unless you want to pay me $40,000 a month to do nothing. I might let you slide for a month or two. Anything else you want to add that I didn't ask you about that you feel is important people know about this report?
No, that's fair. They can come on our website and read it. It's. I think the staff did a wonderful job in trying to make this accessible. I know that audit reports can be filled with jargon and not appealing or really readable, but they worked hard to limit the jargon, to explain complex concepts, and I'm really proud of the work they did, and they did it almost on time. I mean, we missed it by about a week and a half, but that's pretty good.
Well, it's a lot better than the website. Yeah. Let me take one call, let you go. Let's go to Moncton. Paul, good morning. How's it going?
That's fine. How are you, Mark, and how are you, Doug?
I'm well, thank you.
Hey, a quick question about a report that came out a few months ago. It was a report on the Department of Liquor Control, and we're not even going to get into the overtime pay issue, but it was a report kind of just summarizing what the Liquor Control was about and the finances. And in it, Doug, something struck me, and to this day I've not been able to wrap my head around it, and it's this. You stated that the state operates on a 65 to 85% markup.
Correct.
You said if it was to be given to the wholesalers, they were looking at a 20% or so markup for the wholesalers, a 25% markup for the stores. But then you went on to say that will result in, I think, a 15% increase. And I don't see how we go from 45% total markup versus a 65 to 85% by the state showing a 15% increase.
Yeah, a couple of things. That's a good question. We purposely, when we worked with the consultant that we found who is in the middle of this business and has advised a number of states who are considering privatization, some have already gotten there, because we wanted their help. And we said at the outset, look, let's be extremely conservative. You know, it would be, I think, inappropriate to assume that certain players would come into the market and keep prices down and that we'd sell a lot more spirits. Those are assumptions that we weren't comfortable with. In fact, I think it's pretty clear that some of the mix of those things I just described would, in fact, happen. For example, the major supermarkets in Vermont, you know, Shaw's and Price Chopper and Hannaford's, they all sell beer and wine. And I think it's likely that most, if not all of them, would see an opportunity to get into spirits. They're already licensed to sell alcohol, so why wouldn't they if they think it's potentially profitable? Furthermore, there's a place like Costco. There's only one in the state, as far as I know, and they're very active in Washington State, and they have their own brands, and they're quite inexpensive and so forth. So I think it's entirely possible that our assumptions, which we intended to be conservative, were just that. And that what you'd find is a mix of some particular types of spirits that might be a little more expensive, but that these guys, like I mentioned, the big box stores, would find a way to make them affordable.
Well, I understand that. The one thing that I would keep in mind is this, is that allowing the wholesalers, you know, the current beer wine distributors to handle the alcohol does not necessarily mean that we could open up a product that is regulated to more stores into grocery stores. The honest truth is, as a liquor store owner, I know the customers who come in there. I know those who are problems. And by opening up to more stores, we open up the opportunity for people to carry it because they do with beer and other items from store to store to store, especially when you get thrown out of one for showing up, you know, with alcohol under breath or drunk.
Correct. Sure.
So the other issues there, the state could divest itself of it to wholesalers, still regulated to the point of only allowing X amount of stores with the product, and thereby, you know, that too would have an impact upon the price. But it's not just a straight business model, you know, fortunately.
No, I understand. It's a special product, no question about it.
Yep, well, thank you.
Thank you, Paul.
You're very welcome.
I appreciate it. Doug, if you could send over the contract of that person drilling in the background, I'd like to review that. I'd like to review that this afternoon.
Happy to do that.
Thank you for your time this morning. Appreciate it.
You're welcome, Mark. Take care.
Doug Hoffer is the auditor of accounts for the state of Vermont, talking about a report that he did about Vermont Health Connect, the healthcare website, which has been, by most accounts, problematic, would be, I think, charitable. And finding a number of deficiencies that still haven't been corrected in terms of recommendations done in the 6 or 7 reports that have come out that have examined what went wrong with this thing. And a mixed bag of findings by the auditor here this morning, including that thing he was just talking about, a company that's getting paid $40,000 a month to basically do nothing. Wow. Unbelievable. All right. Maybe you have some thoughts, comments on what the auditor had to say this morning. Moment of your time for our friends in the beautiful Lake Champlain Islands at Shore Acres Inn and Restaurant, where you could enjoy dinner on Friday and Saturday night this weekend there. So why not head up to the beautiful Lake Champlain Islands? Sounds like we're going to get some pretty nasty weather coming in early next week. So why not enjoy the weekend here coming up? And scoot on up to the Champlain Islands tomorrow night or Saturday night for dinner. Chef Dan Rainville is back for another season. He is just fantastic. He's kind of like the Mike Roussel of cooking. He's really got a lot of experience and just a great guy, too. So if you love crab cakes, he just makes some fabulous ones, better than anything you're going to get down in the Chesapeake Bay or any place like that. Also, delicious fish, steak, and chicken, and other specials for you, too. Vegetarians will find something there that you love, too. And I encourage you to head on up there. Make it Friday and Saturday night. Now, here's another idea for you. It's always nice to have something to look forward to in your life, isn't it? Why not make a reservation? Take a little time off this summer. You don't have to go through any, you know, major international airports or anything. You could just get in the car and go up to the beautiful Lake Champlain Islands, which is a place that many people come across the Atlantic Ocean to come to and visit. And you have it right here in your own backyard. So you can make reservations for a little time off this summer. And then when you leave after dinner and you've made your reservation, you actually have something to look forward to coming up this summer. Isn't that a great idea? That's my free idea of the day for you. You can call them at 372-8722, 372-8722, Shore Acres Inn and Restaurant in beautiful North Hero, Vermont. Just a short drive, but another world away. Maybe you have some thoughts, comments on what the auditor had to say. Also, any reaction to the Mary Powell op-ed piece that appeared in Wednesday's paper. I'd be curious to hear what you have to say about that. We'll take a short break. We'll be talking next hour with Dr. Peter Spector about some breakthroughs in cardiology, and we'll be back right after these important announcements.
336 delivered during the car, truck, and SUV challenge at Lamoille Valley Ford. Let me say a huge thanks to Dennis Roberge, owner of Roberge Planning in Derby, for buying his new F-150 at Lamoille Valley. Folks, we have a lot of deals to make to reach our new goal of 400 new Fords delivered by April 30th, and Lamoille Valley Ford is ready to do what it takes to earn your business. Right now, between our two stores, we have close to 700 vehicles to choose from, including 57 hard-to-find 2014 F-150s, and when you combine our upfront discount with Ford rebates, you can take up to $10,250 off while they last. Plus, Ford is also kicking off spring on our entire lineup with huge rebates and some crazy low payment lease deals for you. So drive Route 14, 15, or 16 to Lamoille Valley Ford in Hardwick. Come help us reach our goal and get a great deal during the Car, Truck, and SUV Challenge happening right now at Lamoille Valley Ford.
Advance Auto Parts knows what makes a car guy a car guy. It's the courage to take on the greasiest of jobs, the guts to stare down the belly of the beast and replace a radiator. It's fearlessness, and it has no patience for dead batteries. That's why Advance Auto Parts offers free battery testing. And if you buy a new AutoCraft battery, we'll even install it for free so you can get back to your next big project. Advance Auto Parts, for guys who love getting under the hood.
Most vehicles, most locations. See store for details.
Do you have filed tax returns or owe the IRS or state more than $10,000? If you don't take action now, your tax problem is only going to get worse. Seizure of property, bank levies, wage garnishments, and potential criminal prosecution. Call the experts at U.S. Tax Shield for help at 1-800-206-8002. Our tax advisors will review your case for free, inform you of your rights, and give you a guaranteed quote. And we have an A-plus rating with a BBB, so get protected. Call U.S. Tax Shield now at 1-800-206-8002.
We are different at Midstate Jeep, and the proof is in the experience. Buying a car should be fun, and it should be an easy process. We invite you to stop by our store during the awards season event. Test drive a new Jeep, Ram, Dodge, or Chrysler, and experience how car buying should be. We have some great deals this month, like a brand new 2015 Jeep Patriot for under $15,000, and it comes with a 5-year, 100,000-mile powertrain warranty. How do you beat that deal on a new vehicle? We have our largest selection ever of Jeep Wranglers, just in time for top-down driving, and the all-new Jeep Renegade has arrived. Experience the Mid-State difference yourself and put the fun back into getting a vehicle today.
At Mid-State Dodge and Hyundai, we make it easy every day. Better prices, better quality, better service, come in and see. At Mid-State Dodge and Hyundai, we make it easy. We make it easy.
244-1777 is our local number. Toll free 877-291-8255. Coming up tomorrow on the program, we'll be down at the Vermont Legislature. Among the guests, the governor will be joining us. Also, the commissioner of the Department of Environmental Conservation, Dave Mears, will be joining us at about 9:15. Tomorrow we'll talk about the lake bill, which got out of Senate Natural Resources yesterday. 244-1777, toll-free 877-291-8255. Interesting piece in Politico today talking about Hillary Clinton and her, well, I guess I can't say newfound because she was using the same rhetoric in her election when she ran against Obama. But this whole politics of inequality and talking about the inequality in this country and how there needs to be a change for that. The Politico piece talks a little bit about the rhetoric that Hillary Clinton is using these days, and then they went and interviewed a bunch of Wall Street types, hedge fund managers and big fat cat CEOs, to see what their reaction was. And I thought actually the reaction was more interesting than what she actually had to say. Let me just give you a little of what she's saying here. So she goes to Iowa and says on Tuesday that there's something wrong when hedge fund managers pay lower taxes than nurses or the truckers I saw on I-80 while I was driving here over the last 2 days. All right. So she so the Wall Street people say, yeah, okay, thank you. One of them said, it's just politics, and that she was just saying this for the benefit of the left, the progressive Democrats, in order to keep somebody like Elizabeth Warren out of the race, who MoveOn.org has been really pushing to have jump in the race. Let me just give you one of the money paragraphs here. Indeed, many of the financial sector donors supporting her just-declared presidential campaign say they've been expecting the moment when Clinton started calling out hedge fund managers and decrying executive pay all along, right down to the complaints from critics that such arguments are rich, coming from someone who recently made north of $200,000 per speech and who has been close to Wall Street since her days representing it as a senator from New York. Basically the CEOs are saying, yeah, okay, you can spout all the rhetoric you want, and we'll continue to write you the big fat checks here. There is a pack of Hillary Clinton's that's expected to raise something to the tune of $300 million. This is on top of the billion that she's expected to raise on her own and through the Democratic Party. I mean, wow. All right, that's going to wrap things up for hour number one. We'll be talking some breakthroughs in cardiology coming up at about 10:15. We'll also take your calls, and we'll check in with our White House crew. Keep your dial right here. This is FM 96.1 WDEV Warren, broadcasting from the top of Sugarbush and the flagship AM 550 WDEV, Waterbury, Montpelier. News is next.